Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Right, here's a turnover and it's Cal Clutterbuck. A shorthanded breakaway. Score! Clutterbuck, shorthanded.
Islanders country, hello. This is PT Isles, the Limping In Edition. Alongside Noel Fogelman, I'm Joe Bono. A reminder, you can listen to this show and all Lighthouse Hockey podcasts on iTunes. Please rate and review or find us on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or over at lighthousehockey.com. Lighthouse Hockey, your SB Nation home for your New York Islanders coverage. Noel, you're wearing an Islanders shirt, but were you a Rangers fan tonight?
You know, like, Islander fans can, like, and Ranger fans can get together on two things so far. Their hatred of Tom Wilson and their hatred of CeeLo Green, going back to the stadium series, how bad that was. But, you know, even when you root for the Rangers, they still can't help you out, you know, tonight. We'll get into it later, but I mean, the league has to be ashamed of themselves of this whole situation. It's embarrassing. I mean, George Parros, you can blame George Parros.
Made for great TV, though. Made for great TV.
But you know what?
I tell you what, I was not tuning in for Capitals Rangers tonight otherwise.
Right. You know what's so funny? Just a little quick sidebar. NBC is losing hockey in a couple months, but so now they decide to debut a new scorebook. It's just so funny. It's complete train wreck, you know, George Parros, who basically, if all you wrestling fans remember Jack Tunney from the 80s, he was a WWE, like, president, or back there was WWE.
Of course.
President. He was basically a figurehead. That's what George Parros is. He has no power. It's above him. It's Colin Campbell. It's Gary Bettman. But everyone's going to shit on him. So be it. He should be gone. Absolutely. There should be some sort of, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm just so flabbergasted by this whole thing. It's a black eye for the league. But you know what? The league wants this. And the casual fan or NHL fan, it's much like casual NASCAR fan. They tune in for what? They tune in for the crashes. I'm not a NASCAR fan. I love crashes. And if I wasn't a hockey fan, I love the fight. And that's basically what hockey is now. It's become a sideshow, and it's a shame.
Well, they have to get rid of the Jack Tunney and bring in the Gorilla Monsoon to clean things up.
Absolutely.
Wrestling fans will get that. Well, tonight, listen, we have a PT Isles roundtable tonight. Noel and I are joined by James Nichols, co-host of the Nassau Men podcast, and Rob Taub. They are also co-editors for nyislesblog.com. They became that earlier this year and have done a great job assembling a team of writers this season. James, Rob, how you doing?
Doing pretty well, Joe. How are you doing?
Glad to be here, guys. Good to see you.
And James, you were, what, about a week and a half, 2 weeks into married life?
Yeah.
What's the update? What can you tell us?
It feels the same as not being married, but living with my wife for over a year and a half now. So not much has changed except my title. I feel, I guess, more important, but not really.
Trust me, and, I'm going on 20 years. It gets worse. the title, you know, not the marriage.
Well, James is still on the honeymoon period, to where it's not an issue for him to be doing podcasts, you know, day in and day out, multiple times a week, and you know, missing their Netflix time together and other types of occasions. So I had that period as well. Now I get ugly. You know, I get side eye anytime I gotta go into a room with a microphone. but let's talk about our New York Islanders, who they won those back to back games, Rob, against the Rangers. you felt like, wow, you know what? This could have gone south real quick. And other, and then they shut them out 4-0 and 3-0. Varley amazing, 3 consecutive shutouts. They do it against their crosstown rivals. And you're going, you know what? They might be able to build some momentum here, looking at the schedule to go going into the playoffs and maybe kind of turn this thing around. And then against a 28-year-old rookie goaltender that hasn't played in the year, they lose back-to-back games to the worst team in the league. Well, how concerned are you at the moment?
I was on a podcast with another person. I said, I'm going to go with a 5 out of 10 if I was doing it out of 10. I think there were some things over the last two nights that made you really raise an eyebrow, but I got to go with what a lot of people have said, where it's an emotional letdown. The old Ranger hangover, we haven't used it in a long time because the Islands have just battered the Rangers for the past 7 years. And usually they've come out on the other side when they played their next game. But I think the emotional letdown was kind of there the last two nights. So I wouldn't be totally over-concerned. They still built leads. They played pretty well to get those leads. Just a few mistakes, a few bad plays, and yeah, they gave Michael Hauser his 2 wins in the NHL. But I'm not totally over concerned. If it happens again tomorrow and Saturday, I'm going to disregard Monday because the Bruins are a totally different animal than the Devils. Then it could be turned up to like a 9 or a 10.
James, your level of concern? Let's use it on the same 1 to 10 scale. If Rob's a 5, you are a...
Yeah, I'll say, you know, about a 4. I'm not overly concerned either because, you know, this is a classic tale of what did you do for me lately, right? And the fans are freaking out about the 2 drop games to the bottom of the barrel team in the NHL, which is understandable. But time and time again, the Islanders have shown that they know how to raise their level when it counts. So, you know, it was concerning to see them lose to a 6th-string ECHL goalie. But, you know, in the second game of the back-to-back, they didn't have, you know, Barzal in the lineup. And that was maybe a little bit of rest, maybe a little bit of a message. But, you know, going into the playoffs, I think it's a clean slate. And at this point, who they're going to play, where they're going to play is pretty much pick your poison, right? Everyone's firing on all cylinders going into the playoffs. Taylor Hall with the Bruins is a nice addition for them. The Capitals are getting beat up by the Rangers or beating up the Rangers right now. Not really sure how that's going because we're doing this at the moment. But and then, you know, the Penguins, who gave us a run for our money this entire season, are a possibility as well. But, you know, I said this on my show last night. I said, you know, year one in the playoffs with Trotz, we beat the Penguins. Year two, we beat the Capitals. If we happen to match up with the Bruins in year three, why not do it again, right?
Well, listen, I think I don't know how you feel. I've kind of hit the wall of this season watching this team. I know they talked about that with the team Barry Trotz did last night. Hey, listen, they played deep into the summer, right? And they had, you know, they played 30 some odd playoff games last year. And then it's a 56 game sprint to this season. You know, he really wasn't getting on these guys as much as he could have after the game. And really has faith still in this group that they're going to be able to turn this thing around and that, you know, that their effort will be there when the games count. And, you know, there was a letdown and I understand that there was home ice on the line. I put out a tweet actually before the Buffalo game started and I said, if the Islanders win out, you know, do they win the division? And I said, I say no.
Right.
And, you know, after the Buffalo game, it was, if the Islanders win out, you know, do they finish in third after these two losses? Because right now it feels like more than likely they will probably end up being in the 4th spot. And you know what? You're either matching up against the Penguins or the Capitals. And it's been that way for a long time now that you're probably going to match up in round one against the Penguins or the Capitals.
Yeah. And, you know, we played this game before with both these teams. You know, we played well against the Bruins this year. I don't really want to have to worry about them until potentially the second round. That's the unknown in the playoffs. We haven't seen, an Islander Bruins playoff series in quite some time. So it's, you know, getting that is away. It's a good break, but just going back to the Sabres games for a second, we all knew how the first game was going to end. If anyone's been watching Islander hockey for years, unknown goalie, they lose that game. I mean, basically besides an emergency goalie coming in and shutting out the Islanders, this is as low as it can get. sixth-string goalie, an ECHL goalie who hasn't played in over a year. It's a great story. I mean, he was born with bilateral clubfoot, which my oldest son had. Luckily, you know, he didn't have as many surgeries as Michael Hauser did, who had 14 before he was two. And it's a great story. It's feel good. I'm sure Disney's already working on the rights, you know, for it. You know, I don't know who will play Michael Hauser, but it'll be a great story. Last night, I mean, I figured Matt Barzal would get some sort of break. I would assume the last game of the year, not when something's still on the line. I mean, that now I think he had the 284 games.
48
in a row, something like that. It was like the fifth longest in our history, which is great. You know, it's a great stat that he stays healthy. But Barzal still does not have Barry Ross's trust. You know, it's been a couple of years already, and there's still something there. It's, you know, hopefully he'll gain it. I mean, because he's still making dumb plays. It's still, he's going to lead the league or lead the team in penalty minutes for the Islanders. I mean, your best player should not be
doing that. Strange season.
It's been an odd, uneven
season for Barzal, right? He's had some really great moments, highlight real special type moments. He came out really strong this season. And then obviously the penalty saga, not only him taking penalties, but also not getting penalties called against him, getting fined for embellishment a couple times, Barry having to kind of use him to make a statement. And Rob, what's always been, I think, interesting about this relationship is that Barry Trotz is trying to develop a young player and make him into a better, more complete player. And I think Barzal has bought into that over the last couple of years after, you know, scoring 80 plus points in year one and having to really adapt his game to Barry Trotz's style. But he's also at the same time the team's best player. So you're making an example of the team's best player while it's also a young player that you're also trying to kind of continue to get him into the best mindset moving long term. It's an interesting, you know, it usually your star player also is in your youngest player in those type of circumstances when a coach is trying to make a statement.
Yeah, the dynamic between Trotz and Barzal is still, you know, I think it's still evolving in a sense. I think, look, he's taken a lot of bad penalties this year, but I also think the treatment that he's received from the league, it's hard to blame him for kind of being the kind of player, like that kind of player. I'm not saying he complains or anything like that, but I mean, the penalties are in one sense, but the trust, look, he wants Barzal to be the best player he can be. And that means bringing it every night and not letting up. I think when we've seen when Barzal lets up in his play, the penalties come out, the undiscipline, all the little things that Barry is trying to get out of his game and to make him, you know, the two-way forward he probably is going to be. I think it's an evolving process. And look, it can be very frustrating at times to watch Barzal because we know how good he is. And then you see him take that stupid penalty and you're like, what are you doing? But it's overall, it's also his maturity. He's, what is he, 20, 23, 24 years old? He's still a very young player in this league. And yet he's the Islanders' best player. But there are times when he doesn't show it. And it's the little things in his game, like those penalties that Trotz is trying to get him away from. Become a Sidney Crosby in one sense, but also do what you have to do, but be smart. Sometimes he's not the smartest player on the ice. And that comes with the territory with being the best player on the ice is you're going to make mistakes, but the way he does it sometimes, it's sometimes like he's not thinking. And I think that's what bothers Trotz. And that's why he doesn't have his full on trust, even after 3 years of being coached by him.
James.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think you're right that the situation with Trotz and Barzal is still fluid. You know, he's not out there late in games where I think he would be an asset, but you know, there are definitely concerns about his defensive play. And if he could actually help keep the puck out of the net, you know, when the goaltender is off of the other team and they have the extra man. So I definitely don't disagree there. But in times like this, and I think maybe that's why he was benched, part of the reason why he was benched last night, you know, Trotz did just say it was for, you know, the reason to give him rest. But there has been plenty of times, too, where you need your star player to be your star player and get something going for your team. And there's been plenty of opportunities where that it was needed from Barzal and it never happened. So, you know, again, it's, I personally think that there was a little bit of a message there to say, you know, hey, you know, whatever happens in these next couple of games doesn't matter. When we get to the playoffs, we need you to be you. You know, so yeah, you're going to rest, but you also got to think about your game, and you're going to sit up and watch everything unfold on the ice and, you know, come back whenever we dress you again with a new mindset and a new focus and be the star player of this team and be the, you know, pretty much the leader in the room right now, because, you know, no Lee and maybe a little bit of a lack of leadership. They need another guy to step up and be that bona fide leader.
I feel like, sorry, Joe, it would have been a bigger message had he sat him for one of the Ranger games.
That wasn't going to happen, though.
Yeah. I know, but that would have been a bold move by Barry.
I think
back-to-back of a last-place team.
I didn't – just to try – I mean, that would never happen, but if it did happen, I think half the fan base would be outside with pitchforks and knives waiting for Barry Trotz. It's – I mean, we could talk about it in, like – in that sense of the term, but you're right. It would be a bold message, but I was not, I mean, him being set against Buffalo. Okay. I think Barry wants to, the message is sent, and this team knows they're in the playoffs. Just get this guy rested. But to do something like that, I think would have warranted a much bigger, like a bigger response. Like instead
this of this one had a dual purpose though. Yeah. It was like, rest physically, rest mentally, and I'm sending a message. It was a little bit of a three for the price of one for Barry Trotz. So it was a bit of a low-hanging fruit type of scenario that he took advantage of. And, you know, we'll see. You know, I don't want to make a – but I will. I say I don't want to, but now I'm going to. Right? A Tom Wilson, Matt Barzal comparison in that, like, how – like, you know, this guy keeps on doing the same thing, right? No matter who's talking to him, no matter what the league does, whether it would have been a fine or a suspension or a more hefty fine, you know, there's been other things that have happened to a repeat offender. Now, what he's guilty of compared to Barzal is apples and oranges. But it is frustrating to see a player continually do it because, you know, they're talking to him about this throughout the season. You know, they're showing him on film. They know they're having sidebar meetings with
him out.
And for it to continually happen, it's very strange. It's very strange to continuing to make the same mental errors.
Right. And I think to Noel's point,
same decisions.
I think to Noel's point too, right. You know, he didn't get benched in the Ranger game or in either of the Ranger games, but I think it was the timing of it really, right. He was prevalent in those games. And then when it came to that Buffalo game where, you know, they, again, like we said, were addressing their sixth string goaltender. They didn't have a Jack Eichel. They didn't have a Taylor Hall, pretty much an AHL team with Sam Reinhardt on it. You need your best player to be your best player. And in that first game against Buffalo, he was a ghost out there. And that's not something that should happen when you're playing the last place team in the NHL and you're a supposed top 10 center in the league. So I think the message was sent after that first Buffalo game just to be like, hey, like this is the time where you need to, you know, bank 3 points easy and you did nothing.
Yep. We talked about James, you mentioned players needing to step up and Noel. For me, that's Kyle Palmieri. Like we don't, I mean, the trade wrestle right now is get the same grade as Francisco Lindor's Met tenure, right? It'd be about an F. Or maybe this would be a D+ and Lindor's an F. But, you know, how we'll look upon a trade, especially for a rental, right? This isn't like a situation where he's having a slow start and then the Islanders get knocked out of the playoffs and you're getting, okay, a training camp, more familiarity with the system and da-da-da-da. No, this is kind of probably going to be it for him and Travis Ajak. How much – I feel that's going to be huge for them. Like, if they're going to make some noise, that has to happen. That trade has to actually have an impact.
I mean, you know, it's funny because like when they acquired, you know, Gigi Paggio last year, they lost like 7 straight. You know, thankfully, it's a horrible thing to say, but the pandemic was perfect for the Islanders to rest, reset, get the players, you know, accustomed to each other and get in the bubble. But that being said, Paggio made contributions. That first game against the Rangers, he had that big fight. He scored a goal. But Palmieri is like, you haven't seen anything. And the funny thing is AJ Greer, who was sent to Jersey, was called up by the Devils. So right now he has one less goal than Kyle Palmieri. It'd just be kind of funny to see AJ Greer score against the Islanders, because you know that's going to happen next game. You know, something is going to be, he's going to be productive and do something. But I'll give Kyle Primary a clean slate in the playoffs. Same thing with Travis Zajac, but Zajac's not as important as Palmieri because they still have Leo Komarov. You know, I can't believe I just said that. But Leo's been good with Barzal on that line. And Islander fans can kill me. He needs to be on that line with Matt Barzal. He needs to be, because who else are you going to throw out there right now that plays similar to... But
I would feel better about that if the other lines have been working, right? So if lines two and three are clicking, and then you're saying, I can live with Komarov on the first line because I don't want to shake up the chemistry of the other three. But we haven't really found a spot where Palmieri is flourishing, and they haven't even tried it.
Well, I will say this. The second line as of late actually has been playing pretty well. Yeah. Beauvillier is starting to wake up. The trio of Nelson, Beauvillier, and Bailey are starting to wake up, and they're going to, hopefully take what they did in the playoffs last season, and I think they might do it again. However, I think the problem here is that they've tried everything as far as line combinations, right? And, you know, the last thing that they have to attempt is to put Kyle Palmieri on that first line, which they haven't done yet.
Right.
He hasn't clicked anywhere. And I don't know how much of that is his fault, because aside from the three players on the second line that I just stated, who really has been clicking since the trade deadline, or even a little bit before the trade deadline, because they had kind of just stumbled into it and they're still stumbling. So
here's a question, right? If Komarov's on the first line, Travis Zajac isn't even part of this. He's not part of the lineup.
Right. And I said,
right. Cause I'm going to play Pageau, Palmieri and Wallstrom.
Yeah. I said from the get go that I think Zajac was a necessary acquisition, but to be a 13th forward, I don't know that he actually has a spot. Right. I don't know that he actually has a spot in this lineup.
But he had a spot because everyone thought Komarov would not have a spot. Komarov's on the first line. You see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
It's having Komarov on there is also then putting Zajac not in the lineup. At least that's the way I would expect those lines to be rolled out.
Right.
Rob?
I will say this about Palmieri. He was brought here for the playoffs. I know, and I agree with you, Joe, the whole grades, we're giving him it would probably be an F or a D plus right now, but Lou Lamoriello brought him here for the playoffs. That was the main goal, to see make impact in the playoffs. Sure. And I agree with James. He hasn't found his niche yet, and they've tried everything except the first line, which we've been barking about for like 2 or 3 weeks now. So maybe it happens in these last 2 or 3 games, who knows, but he's here for the playoffs. If he doesn't show up in the playoffs, then the trade was a complete failure, an absolute complete failure. So I'm willing to give Palmieri, because I watched him for a long time in New Jersey, and I've seen how good he can be. Travis Zajac is an entirely different story. He is a 13th forward, so that's here nor there. But I'm giving Palmieri, I will give him the postseason. If he doesn't show up in the postseason, then I get, like, what else can you say? I mean, really, what else can you say? It's just what it wasn't in the cards. But they got, if he gets going in the postseason, all will be forgiven from how bad he's been so far.
And the thing with that is, like, he's playing for a contract, whether it's here or someplace else. So he has to produce for himself, you know. And, like, he was right here for the power play also. And I believe his only goal was on the power play. But it's been non-existent. So, I mean, it's just like, I'll give you the reset, you know, in the playoffs. But he has to show at least a pulse in the games leading up to the postseason.
And that's a good segue to, we want Palmieri to show a pulse. You want the Islanders to show a pulse. And this idea of, can a team just flip the switch after playing? It's not just losing back-to-back games to the Sabres. You know, they have a very pedestrian record after Anders Lee injury. I think Andrew Gross put out a stat that I couldn't believe. I think that the Rangers are the only team that they've beaten regulation since April 6th.
Yeah, something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
They haven't won a lot of games in regulation
at
all. So, you know, if I'm going to play the glass is half full, I'm saying to myself, in the playoffs, the, you know, the ice gets smaller, and this is the Islanders type of game, and the game is going to get tighter, and that's going to, you know, they're going to find their, they're going to be a difficult team to play against, because they were built this roster for playoff style hockey. That's all I can tell myself. And listen, they still have given up the second least goals in the league, you know, so that is still what they do best, is keeping the puck out of their net when they're playing well. And that can really frustrate a team, but can they have that count? Can they have that, you know, counterattack offense that is taking, you know, opportunistic like they have been in the past, and score enough to beat a team like the Washington Capitals or the Pittsburgh Penguins? Because I tell you what, if they play game one and they lose 3-0, people are going to be ready for a 5-game series at best.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Joe. I think they are going to turn around. I think we've seen that this team can flip it on when the playoffs comes. We saw it last year. Sure, they had the break from the pandemic, but like Barry Trotz said last night, this team is battle tested, and he trusts his guys that they'll be ready. And we could go on and on about how bad these last two games were, but this is a playoff hockey team. And when they play, when they're on their game, they're one of the toughest teams to beat in the league. And we saw it earlier this year when they had that long winning streak, like they always do now, that they're on top of their game and no one can stop them. The whole thing with Andrews Lee, I got to give it, I just think the leadership, and we mentioned it before, and this is where Matthew Barzal comes into the picture. He's got to be a leader. And he's also been one of those guys who has not been great since the trade. And I could see why it can have an adverse effect, because you lose one of your line mates, but that's your time when you need to step up too. But I think this team will be ready for the playoffs. I don't think that the scoring can dry up, whatever. We've seen now over the last 3 years that this team has a problem after the trade deadline, whether it's something in the room, something in their mentality, something switches after they do a move at the trade deadline that it just, something doesn't.
Well, maybe, you know what, you know, maybe they should not get the perfect fit at the trade deadline. Maybe they should get a player that makes no sense. It won't be an instant Islander way type of acquisition. Cause that's all we heard about Pajot and Green. These guys fit into exactly what a Barry Trotz team wants. And same thing with Pajot and Palmieri. And know what? They don't win games with those guys. You know, they needed someone who did something completely different than the Islander way.
I never thought of Palmieri as the perfect fit. I thought of him as the right fit at the right time, because they needed another forward. That was a given. But I just think give these guys a few more days, let them get settled, let them get ready for the playoffs, and then all bets are off, because the playoffs are a total crapshoot. And we've seen the last 2 years, if you count the Islanders out, they surprise you. And that's why as much as people want to call out Barry Trotz and say he needs to change this and change that, the proof is in the results. And that's what really everyone should go on until it's proven different.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that. I mean,
all right, so
we do this. It feels like we do this every year. It's like, oh, are the Islanders gonna, you know, are they gonna make it
every week?
Okay, fine. Even better, every week. I feel like we do this all the time. It's like, are we really gonna doubt them going into the playoffs? And I will say this too: the schedule is extended a little bit, right? So they were gonna have a little bit of time off, which is now actually a little bit longer. I think it went from like 4 days off to something like almost nine because of the Vancouver Canucks schedule. So they're going to get a little bit of rest. Maybe it's going to act like
a mini pandemic. Let's call it a mini pandemic.
Right. And they're going to have
a 9-day break.
A mini
go find a hotel room somewhere, you know? play some ping pong and hit the ice.
Right. So, you know, who knows if that's something that they, you know, maybe they band together in that 9-day span, they get a little bit of rest and, you know, they come out firing on all cylinders, which would be fantastic going into the playoffs.
All right, so we'll wrap this up now. Just maybe final thoughts from you two guys. Do you feel like the Islanders can get? Sounds like you lean yes, but you feel like they can still get out of a first round matchup with the Penguins or Capitals.
I'll let James go first.
All right, James.
I love it. Yeah, I think so, and you know. everybody will bring up statistics on what happened this year. And I'll say, you know, again, whenever somebody or a team gets to the playoffs, everything, you know, clean slate. They've proven before that they could beat them, you know, despite if it was less times than the Penguins beat the Islanders or the Capitals beat the Islanders, which I think those are probably going to be the matchups. They've proven that they can beat them. They've proven that they can be competitive in those games, even if they lost. So I think it'll be a grind. I think it'll be hard fought, but you know, like I said, we did it year one against Penguins. We did it year two against Capitals. I don't think in year three, you know, we can say any different. Like we've said a couple of times already, they know how to turn it on. And I think that they will.
Yeah, I'm just going to bounce off what James said. I agree that they can get out of the first round. I think they can go on a long run. Look, you watch the games between them and the Capitals this year, outside of the few mistakes that were made in most of the games, very tight, very even games. Same thing with the Penguins. Even though the last two games that they played against Penguins speed really, really did a number on them. But I'm not I think the Penguins can be had. I think they're defensively, I don't think they're as good as people say they are. Really, it's their forward group that's surprising, because anyone who plays against the Islanders wearing a Penguin uniform decides to score a goal. So that, like, that's something to keep in mind going into the playoffs. But Pittsburgh's goaltending, I take the Islanders goaltending in a heartbeat. And you bring up a guy like, and then Washington Vitek Vanacek against Semyon Varlamov. I'm going to go with the veteran. You know, Vanacek's not, he hasn't been in a situation like that. And we saw last year, like James said, when they played against Samsonov, they had his number too. So I'm with James. I think they can get out of the first round and then see where it goes.
All right. One real quick bonus question for everyone. We'll start with Noel. Which team would you prefer to play?
Oh man,
I'm not going to answer. Oh, okay. Because both the teams that they'll be, the Pens or the Capitals, I always beat them in the last 2 years. So both of those teams have a chip on their shoulder to really stick it to the Islanders. That being said, I want the Capitals.
Are you asking,
Caps, James?
Are you asking of the three that are already in, or just out of the two?
Just out of those two, I'm guessing that's the likely scenario that they're playing one of those two teams. They'll finish third or fourth.
Okay, I'm gonna say the Capitals. They're going into the playoffs not the healthiest, right? I think Ovechkin's had some issues because Kuznetsov's on the COVID list. Their goaltending is it's good, but it's not proven in the playoffs. And I think that they have the best chance of keeping them from off the score sheet. You know, Sidney Crosby does what he does against the Islanders, and there's just no stopping him when he plays us for some reason. So I think the Capitals are the way to go.
Can we all agree, just before I say my pick, that no one wants the Bruins? None of us want the Bruins.
I actually would have preferred the Bruins out of all of those teams.
I'm kind of in the same boat as James, but I'm going to go with the Penguins. Like I said, I think the Islanders have the better defense, better goaltending. Offense is a crap. It's a total 50-50 split, depending on the night that they, just to see who comes out on top. I just think that the way that the Islanders played against the Penguins this year, and the Penguins won most of the games, but a lot of those games were up for grabs. And I think that the Islanders have a slight advantage over Pittsburgh. And I know that you mentioned it before, that the Penguins will have a chip on their shoulder. Noel mentioned it. The Penguins will have a chip on their shoulder from 2 years ago. This is not 2 years ago, though. The Islanders are a different team. They're a more playoff-ready team. That was a bit of a surprise, the way they just swept them. This is different. These two teams know each other now. They've seen each other 8 times. They probably got tired of playing each other this year. But I got to go with the Penguins. I think that would be the most opportune matchup. Not saying that they can't beat the Caps. I don't want to go up against Alex Ovechkin in the first round after what the Islanders did to him last year.
Do I have to answer my own question?
Yeah.
You know, the Penguins, because the Capital games are all so tight this year. I mean, 6-5, it's 1-0, it's 2-1. You know, you feel like, you know, they're in every game. These Penguin games had weird feels to them. They were strange games. They didn't, you know, they got out of their system and the structure a bunch of times. You know, so that's real tough. Because I feel like, you know, the Islanders are playing the Capitals in a way, for obvious reasons, they're kind of looking themselves in a mirror at times. I think I'd probably lean the Penguins myself. But we shall see. Maybe the standings get so shaken up, and maybe somehow we do find ourselves into an Islander Bruins first round matchup. I would have to do the math and the scheduling to see whether or not that's even possible. but maybe there is a way. We'll see whether it may Islanders Bruins last game of the season for the Islanders. We'll see what Islanders, whether or not that means anything as well. Well, James, I really appreciate it. Nassau Men podcast. Definitely check it out, everyone. And Rob Tal, co-editor here at Isles Blog. And thanks to both of you guys again for doing such a great job on the site this year and bringing in all those young writers that really improved the frequency in our content. So thank you very much. And you guys have a great night.
Thanks, Joe. You too.
You too.
All right. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to PT Isles, part of the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. We're back, PT Isles, Joe Bono, and Noel Fogelman, and this is our Isles Buzz segment, news and stories around the NHL and the New York Islanders, and we started the show with it, but this Tom Wilson, you were really angered by this, Noel. This really got under your skin.
I mean,
you were really pissed off about this. He got the instigator, Tom Wilson, finally got Noel Fogelman.
It's such a shame because he is such a good player. You know, first-round pick. He's perfect on that top
line. First round pick, yeah.
Any team would take him. If he would cut out the bullshit, I'd take him in a second. He'd be a perfect winger on, you know, Matt Barzal's line. It's just, why does he do these things? But you know what? The league enables him. And he's going to keep doing this until someone really gets hurt. I mean, we know he ended Lubomir Vyshnovsky's career, like, was it, I guess you can say, was it 6 years ago already? That long? Wow. But he's going to do something worse, or even worse, someone's going to pull a Chris Simon and just whack him over the head and could even end his career, or worse, kill him. It's such a black eye for the league, but the league doesn't seem to mind, which is a real shame.
And they could have avoided
what happened tonight.
We all enjoyed,
of course,
watching the crashes, like you mentioned. Everyone tuned in for the crashes. They wanted to see people drop the gloves. Had those really humorous photos of the penalty boxes overflowing with players for both sides. You know, this will be on SportsCenter because of what had happened, I'm sure, as well. But the obvious thing was, by suspending him, first off, you send a message to him that as a repeat offender, that will not be tolerated, number one. But you would have avoided that. Perhaps there would have been a fight at some point with one of the other enforcers on the Capitals and a Ranger, fine. But that would have been it. You would not have happened what happened tonight. I was watching the intermission report, and Patrick Sharp's talking about – it was an interesting conversation. I'm not sure if you saw it.
No.
But he was saying how he liked how all the players on the teams matched up against, like, – their own weight class,
right,
for the opening faceoff. Like, no one was taking on someone who wasn't, you know, up to the task of battling him. He goes, that was like the right way to do it, which is an interesting way of talking about, like, just agreeing to having a brawl.
Right.
But it is, you know, the maximum allowed by the CBA. All right. At first, when I saw that, I said, okay, well, he's going to be fine. The maximum amount that was negotiated in. Okay. But where's the suspension? You know, $2,000, you know, for embellishment for Barzal. Someone, you know, put out that, I guess, Lundqvist or someone got fined how much about squirting a water bottle.
That's all. Yeah.
And he does that. And really didn't make much sense. And I'm not sure if we've gotten any really good answers from the league thus far.
Yeah, I don't think you will now. I mean, it's way past that point. The league doesn't have to explain anything. They basically gave their statement. He got fined for what he did, and that's it. They're moving on. And the fine, I mean, who cares about a fine? It's like, you know, $5,000 chump change for these guys. But even sending a one-game suspension wouldn't have done anything. For, like you said, a repeat offender, he's got to be gone for the playoffs to really send a message to the Capitals that this will not be tolerated anymore. But like I said before, the league enables him. His teammates totally enable him. His coach even said it. But I don't even think anyone even brought it up to Barry Trotz, who coached him for a few years.
And liked him as a player.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, he's your guy. You're going to defend him. But there has to be – you want him in the lineup. He does more, you know, good than harm. You would hope he does more good than harm because he like I said, he can score. He's an instigator. But when he cuts out the bullshit, he's a really good player. And then I'm sure you saw the tweet by the Capitals last night.
Promoting, oh, my God.
Which
that intern.
Yeah,
hopefully I'm guessing he's an intern.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure they'll spin it that way. It was just, you know, we didn't see it. And, you know, this guy is not with us.
They were hacked. They were hacked.
Yeah, we were hacked. But it sends such a bad message that
the social media account enables them.
Yeah, of course. You know, and you saw that. And then you see, like, all, you know, all these guys, this is just the way hockey is. You know, the Rangers should stand up for themselves. You know, they have to police it. No, the league should police it, not the players. You know, I mean, and hopefully this is something that'll be, well, it won't be now because the next CBA is in for what, another 6 years now? That maybe they want to open up the CBA and discuss this about certain fines. And if you're fined more than once a year, you get suspended.
Yeah, it should be escalators. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he left the game after the first period due to an upper body injury. Do you think that is at all real? What do you think? A bloody knuckle or something?
it might be like his brain or his heart or his guts, you know, because he doesn't have guts. He definitely is not using his brain. And I don't want to question the guy's heart, but he might be the nicest guy off the field, might be a great teammate, you know, done, you know, dozens of charities. That's great. But when he's on the ice, he's a goon and an idiot, and that has to stop.
Of course, the other storyline about this game was the news that broke really out of nowhere, that Jim Dolan, you know, somehow can have two competent teams as tenants at the same time.
Right.
And fires Gorton, fires JD, and the Rangers, who from an outsider's perspective is looking at what they were building, and I go, well, they're going to be pretty good in a few years. Their time might not be there yet. If they would have made the playoffs, everyone would have said they would have been ahead of schedule. But this was a pretty shocking move, and they could tell unanimously how upset Ranger fans. So a team that hasn't been in the playoffs for 4 years, that team's going to miss the playoffs again this year, lose back-to-back games against their crosstown rivals where they had a chance to still be in it, yet people still had very much a lot of faith in those two guys steering the ship. Maybe not so with the coach, who did not get fired today,
right,
but they did with the president and general manager.
Yeah, and I wonder, like you mentioned, you know, James Dolan can't have two good teams. It's kind of like, you know, I'll give a Seinfeld reference, where there's one episode where Elaine basically became George and George became Elaine, and Jerry had basically one friend who was up, one friend who
Bizarro.
Was So basically,
I'm even, right?
Yeah, exactly. Even. So it's probably the same thing. You know, James Dolan can have two good organizations or teams at the same time. And I wonder if he actually knew JD's name or Jeff Gorton's name or any of the stuff in the Rangers, because he doesn't tend to, you know, spend his paying attention to the Rangers. So I wonder, and his quote or statement, you know, calling for the dismissal of George Karras, that was him. So I wonder how much of the stuff he actually knew, or just told his PR person, come up with a statement, and, you know, whatever it is, it's good, because I know nothing about hockey. Or those guys just didn't like his band. That could be another reason too. So there's so many reasons here. I mean,
what is it? JD and the, he's JD and what? The Short Shot? What are they? JD and the
Short Shots? Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Maybe he just didn't like to share the spotlight with another JD.
Yeah.
Maybe he couldn't handle, you know, the organization wasn't big enough for
exactly
two JDs.
You can't have two teams. No.
Yeah. Multiple Seinfeld references in the same segment. Yeah. You know, they had the second pick overall. They got lucky in the lottery, first pick overall. Yeah. They have Panarin. They got two young, capable goaltenders. They have Adam Fox, right? Yeah, they had some misses. The D'Angelo situation, obviously, is not something that worked out. And they still are looking kind of figure out how to win and that full identity. Right. And maybe Quinn's not the guy that would have led them. I think that was what people, I think, were leaning towards this day. Right. After this year, is Quinn the coach to take this team to the next level? And now you have just chaos, where you have now Chris Drury named, you know, general manager and president.
Yeah.
He's instilled in that position. And then you have a coach going to play out the string, and he's going to determine his fate. He's got 2 years left in his contract. but is he aligned with what Jory's vision is for the team? Really, really interesting to not to be the stable franchise, yeah, you know, in the New York hockey area. Although, you know what? The Islanders were kind of stable. They always had the same GM for all those years. Exactly. And they just had kind of the chaos and the questionable head scratching decisions. And this probably, tops anything the Islanders had did, you know, probably since the days of, you know, Neil Smith resigning out of nowhere after a few months of a couple of acquisitions and running a draft, when that whole thing kind of came apart and Garth was obviously put in as general manager. But probably up and looking back on it, nothing really since rivals what happened today with the Rangers front office.
Right. And you know what, this goes beyond the Rangers and really all sports. When it, you know, a owner fires or basically cleans house because the team is, you know, underperforming, and then they promote someone from within, isn't he part of the losing culture?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, so all of a sudden he's going to turn everything around. You know, love Chris Drury, you know, Trumbull's own. That's what, you know, where I'm living right now. But the great headline is the Rangers hire a little league, you know, player to run their team. And so, that today, which was kind of funny. I mean, I hope it doesn't work out. You know, you want the Rangers to fall on their face, but like you said, they were building something, you know, pretty well here. You know,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, they wrote the letter. Yeah. They communicated to the fans, and the fans were like, "Okay, we accept this.
Yeah.
We understand. You guys gave us a great run,
right,
for 5, 6, 7 years of being a playoff contender, being a Stanley Cup contender. We're okay with this. We're okay with taking a couple steps back to tool back up." And James Dolan was not willing to be patient enough. I tweeted this out when I saw the news, and I was half joking. Not really half. I was fully joking. Dolan watched the Isles lose twice to the Sabres after shutting out the Rangers and just had no choice but to do this. Yeah. But then Larry Brooks comes out with his column, and in the column he says, quote, "The recent mismatches against the Islanders highlighted the team's deficiencies in grit and leadership and may have accelerated, if not prompted, the stunning decision."
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like, did James Dolan, were the Knicks not playing that night, and he watched those two games and said, "What is going on here?"
Right.
Feels that way.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw James Duffy's tweet, which was brilliant. It's like, Lou realizes he needed to get Panarin while signing bottom sixers himself just for one day to shut out the Rangers and MSG and force Dolan to fire Gordon and Davis and destroy the rebuild from the inside out. I mean, it's brilliant, but it's just, I mean, why would anyone want to come here now when you have a meddling owner again? It's, I don't know.
Oh, just for every reason that everyone came to coach the Knicks all those years is that he paid them big money to coach the team. I mean, how many Knicks coaches got $5 million, you know, for $5 million a year for 4 to 5 years, and they got fired after their a year and a half and just cashed in for the next few years. So.
Right. For the most, they're unqualified. I mean, I don't know, coaches too.
Are players not going to want to play for the Rangers and be in New York City because of in a salary cap leap because of James Dolan? I still say probably not. So, but interesting stuff nonetheless. And I was just really, you know, usually when these type of moves happen, there is at least some different varying of opinions within the fan base. On this one, I pretty much universal that everyone just was flabbergasted and could not believe that this is what their owner did earlier this afternoon. And maybe another head scratcher. We'll see how you think about this. The Islanders AHL team, of course, the Bridgeport Sound Tigers that we've come to know and love, were teasing a name change. There was an article that was put out right before their tweets went out where they talked about that some really keen Twitter users noticed. I guess I don't know what they learned. It was in the metadata. I don't know exactly what they were able to check out that it looked like they had secured a Bridgeport underscore Islanders tag,
right,
as a little bit of a clue. And then they started adding the AHL, adding the Wolfpack, and putting out these kind of retooling, reshape, refresh type of branding. And it's a scattered logo with static, and some really clever follower was able to freeze frame it.
Right.
And you can kind of make out what looks like a Bridgeport Islanders logo.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a good job by people who have a lot of time on their hands.
By the way, I tried to do it myself afterwards. I could not get to the same frame. I couldn't do it.
I couldn't either.
Which makes me wonder if it's still, I mean, we're all thinking, oh, hopefully it's still real, but I was doing it. I was hitting the pause button with my index finger like as quickly as I could. Couldn't get to that.
I couldn't do it either. But I mean, it was a tough year for the Sound Tigers. I mean, maybe they do need a reset, reboot. They'll likely finish with the fewest points in the AHL. Only played, 24 games because of the three-team Atlantic Division. But they played well the last six games. I think they were like 4-0-2 or they're 5-0-1. I mean, that stretch could save Brent Thompson's coaching job because, all Islander fans have to hate, Brent Thompson for some reason because we have to worry about our AHL coach because allegedly he hasn't developed any forwards. But that being said, if they do change the name, so be it. And people are going to play, well, there's no Islands, in Bridgeport. Well, there are no Lakes in LA. There's no Jazz in Utah. Team names are team names. They don't have to really be connected to, a city. They just change, whatever. And then people also think that this could be, a move towards the NASA Coliseum when the Islanders move to the new arena in Belmont. I don't think so. I mean, everyone was basically speculating for years that the Islanders or the Sound Tigers would move to Long Island eventually. It makes no sense to me. You want to kind of, expand the fan base, and Bridgeport's a perfect spot. And it's also,
if it was coinciding with a move, I think it would make more sense, but the fact that they're going to be in Webster Arena in Bridgeport, change the name, it feels a little, we're not seeing the full marketing plan underneath why they're doing it. Whereas if they were shifting over and going to play minor league hockey at the Nassau Coliseum, which I'm sure for Islander fans would be amazing. I mean, I think they would draw really, really well there. If there were games at the Nassau Coliseum for an AHL affiliate, it would make more sense and the timing would make more sense. But, I'm not going to make a huge deal over it. Certainly people seem to be scratching their heads as to the timing and the decision to do this.
Right. But then if you change it, from Bridgeport Islanders to what? Long Island Islanders, then you're going to go, we're going to the Islander game. Oh, which one? Oh, the AHL one. Oh, okay. Not the Islander Islanders. Oh, you're doing the AHL Islanders.
So, good question. So what would they be? Let's play this out. So since they're the Bridgeport Sound Tigers are likely to become the Bridgeport Islanders, if the Bridgeport Islanders started playing games at the Nassau Coliseum, they would be the Uniondale Islanders?
Yeah.
Would you call them that?
Right. I mean, you could, but they do have the Long Island Nets, but there's also Brooklyn Nets. But the Brooklyn, the Nets don't play, 5 miles away. So it's a little different.
Well, and the word island isn't already in there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Island Islanders.
Right. So it's
Long Island Islanders would be kind of ridiculous. So
exactly. But that's something.
So now you're limiting. So now it makes me think there's no way they're going because they don't have a name. They don't have the city name. So that's why they won't go back to Long Island. They don't have the city name squared away.
Or you can just call them the L Islands. But who knows?
Not bad either. And we're still waiting to see capacity for whether or not they raise things up for the playoffs here. They made an announcement a little while ago around 33% for indoor stadiums and arenas. Earlier today, they made the announcement for Yankee Stadium and Citi Field that they're going to have vaccinated and unvaccinated sections of fans. Vaccinated sections can be right on top of each other, but you still got to be wearing masks, and then everyone else in other parts of the ballpark will be scattered. So we'll wait and see whether or not anything changes to the indoor seating capacity. Laura Curran, county executive, was pushing for 50%, but as of now, it's stuck on that 33% number come playoff time, which is about 2 weeks away.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to kind of increase that number now when you have to sell tickets and whatnot. So it's going to be interesting. Maybe as they advance further in the playoffs, maybe in the second round or the conference finals, they can expand it. But I'd imagine for the first round, it'll still stay at 33%.
Yes, sir. All right, Noel. Well, this is fun. A lot to talk about the news that broke over the last couple of days. And we'll be doing another show, certainly probably before the playoffs begin. And we'll see whether or not the Islanders are able to turn things around just a little bit, get some good vibes and good momentum going before the start of the playoffs. Special thanks again to James Nichols and Rob Taub for joining us for the roundtable. Coming up next for the Islanders, they play the New Jersey Devils at home at the Coliseum. The next two games, that is tomorrow night, Thursday at 7 p.m., and then Saturday again at 7 p.m., and then the last game of the regular season, a made-up game. They go to Boston to take on the Bruins on May 10th. We'll see whether or not that game has any impact on the standings. For Noel Fogelman, I am Joe Bono. We will talk to you next week, Islanders Country. Good night.